Are you ready to land on Mars?
The landing of InSight, this week on Planetary Radio. Wow. Monday, November 26th, was a great day for science and space exploration. I'm Matt Kaplan of the Planetary Society, this week bringing you special excerpts of our intimate little landing party in Pasadena, California. 1,000 men, women, and children united by their love of the final frontier. You'll hear from my terrific onstage panel and from Emily Lochtwala and Bill Nye reporting from JPL just before and after the landing. And you'll hear the most exciting portions of NASA TV's live coverage at the Jet Propulsion Lab. I've compressed some of those segments to save time, but I don't think you'll be disappointed.
We are at Caltech, as if you didn't know, in the beautiful Beckman Auditorium, where we are about to witness the landing of InSight, the first mission to the core of the Red Planet. In less than 60 minutes, InSight is going to experience its own not quite 7 minutes of terror. We'll be riding along, courtesy of NASA TV, right over our heads here, and our neighbor, the global heart of robotic planetary exploration, the Jet Propulsion Lab, which is operated by our host. Yeah, let's hear it for Caltech.
Then it was time to meet our three in-person panelists.
The first person I'm going to bring out is a professor of mineral physics in the Division of Geological and Planetary Sciences, right here at Caltech, where she does amazing science in the seismological laboratory. Her research includes revealing the mysteries of the interior of our own warm planet. She uses lasers, X-rays, and fantastically powerful diamond anvil cells to simulate Earth's violent core. We'll find out more about those from her in a few minutes. Please help me welcome Dr. Jennifer Jackson. He comes to us directly from the team that has sent InSight to Mars, its destiny on Mars today. He is both a distinguished planetary geologist and one of the engineers who has participated in the creation of the instruments that will take us inside the Red Planet. Joining us here from JPL, please welcome Dr. Troy Hudson. And now, the only other person other than me who has been on all 841 episodes over 16 years of Planetary Radio. He is the Planetary Society's chief scientist, the leader of our education and outreach program, and the program manager for our light sail, solar sail, which we're pretty jazzed about. Please welcome my friend and colleague, a guy who received his PhD right here at Caltech, Dr. Bruce Betts.
Back in Beckman Auditorium, it was time to talk with someone you hear regularly on our show.
We have Emily Lochtwala, senior editor. We also call her our planetary evangelist at the Planetary Society. We don't have video, but we think we've got her on the phone. Emily, are you with us?
I am. Hello, everybody.
Great. You're coming in great here. So where are you at JPL?
I am right now at the Von Karman Auditorium, which ordinarily is a museum, but it's dressed up as a media room, as it always is for major events at JPL. I'm surrounded by media friends of mine from different outlets like National Geographic and Aviation Week and NPR and LA Times, and it's always fun to reunite with all these people for every happy event in space exploration.
Is the anticipation as great there as it is here in Beckman Auditorium?
It's really funny. Everybody's kind of nervous. And, you know, media, they have to prepare both a it landed and an it crashed story. So everybody's feeling kind of both things right now. We're going to wait until nature does its thing, and we'll have to see if InSight successfully lands today. I think everybody expects that it will. But, you know, media, they always have to plan for the worst.
Yeah. Emily, we know that you are exactly where you want to be right now. What are you most looking forward to, other than the landing itself?
I look forward to the pictures. There's going to be a picture taken by each lander camera. There are two of them on the lander. They've been hedging their bets about whether we'll get those right after landing or not. It depends on how well the transmission goes between the lander and the orbiters. There also could be an image from high rise showing the InSight lander under its parachute. That one would be available at the earliest a couple of hours after landing, could be up to 48 hours. So we'll wait and see if they manage to pull off that feat for the third time in a row. And then I'm just looking forward to seeing all my scientist friends be able to relax finally, because they're all really keyed up and on edge right now, because it's the scariest day for them for the rest of the mission. But everybody's in good spirits and really anticipating a good day on Mars today.
Just one more question about those two cameras that are on the lander, which were not essential for science, right? But people like you who do image processing, working with these images that come back from missions like InSight, you're going to have a lot of fun with these, right?
I hope to. You know, these cameras, they're two pretty small ones. They're actually flight spares from the Curiosity rover. Curiosity has nav cams on its mast and has cams on its belly. And these are two flight spare, one nav cam, one has cam for Curiosity. They just tore off the back and put in a color detector instead of black and white ones. So we'll be able to see a flat landscape in nice red color like Mars is. And so I'm looking forward to making animations of the lander, setting out instruments very carefully. And I'm looking forward to watching the shifting of the shadows with the sun rise and sunset. But of course, we won't see a changing landscape as we do on the rovers, because this lander, once it lands, it's not moving ever again.
All right, Emily, we'll let you get back to what you really want to do while you're over there with Von Karman. Have a great time, and we'll be watching along with you.
All right, go InSight.
Go InSight at Aries. That's Emily Lakdawalla, planetary evangelist.
InSight instrument engineer Troy Hudson brought a couple of cool props to the Beckman stage. Jennifer Jackson and Bruce Betts will also get in on the conversation.
What have you got there?
So this is a 3D printed full-scale model of HP cubed. That's the heat flow and physical properties package, the instrument that was provided to InSight by the German Space Agency. And it is the heat flow probe. It is what we will use to take Mars's temperature.
Analyzing the heat flow from the core of Mars, is this the same kind of data that we've learned a lot from here on Earth?
Oh, yes. Yeah, on Earth, what we've been fortunate to have are multiple heat sensors in different parts of the planet. And what we know about Earth is that it varies from, you know, continental regions to, of course, the mid-oceanic ridge region where it's a lot warmer. And on Mars, we expect that the variations may be smaller because the activity is thought to be less. I mean, that's one of the very exciting things, actually, to have these measurements from Mars, because this could be a snapshot of what Earth was like 3 billion years ago.
Wow. We need to get back to NASA TV, but I still have one other question for you, Bruce. And it's about the significance of those Marco CubeSats. Yeah. We know a little bit about CubeSats at the Planetary Society. Why are these so significant?
The Marco CubeSats are significant because they're the first interplanetary CubeSats. CubeSats have become very popular in the last 10 to 20 years in Earth orbit. They're used by universities, they're used by agencies. But this is the first time they'll be going truly interplanetary. And so it's more than anything, they're a technology demonstration that you can do it. And then hopefully they will return data in real time as well.
Those seismometers, Troy, give us an idea of just how amazingly sensitive these are.
The types of movement that these seismometers can see, it's the sorts of differences in space smaller than a hydrogen atom. But what that means in practice on Mars, Mars has tides. There's a moon, one of Mars's moons, Phobos. It's very small. It's about the size of Los Angeles. But it orbits very close to the surface. And as it orbits, it actually makes the ground move up and down, kind of like the moon does on Earth with the oceans and the ground. But on Mars, no oceans, just the surface. And it's less than a millimeter of movement, nothing you would ever feel, nothing you would ever see. But the seismometer can see it. And by seeing this flexure of the ground, we get an idea of how thick the crust is where we've landed. So it's very precise and very sensitive. And that's one of the reasons why we have to protect it so much, why we have that wind and thermal shield, that white dome, which is sort of our portable hole.
It's almost like a bell jar that goes down over it.
Right, right. Protects it from the sun and the wind.
How does this compare with seismometers that we've been using for years here on Earth?
They're similar in sensitivity, but the coupling is going to be a little bit different, and this is actually the first time that we can get a seismometer that's coupled to another planet. I mean, it's been about 50 years since the lunar seismometers were deployed, and about 130 or so years that the first teleseismic event was detected and analyzed here on Earth.
130 years?
Just
where
about.
Where was it detected?
Just about. Well, it was detected in Europe, and since then there have been tens of thousands of seismometers deployed over the entire planet. This is just a really special and incredible opportunity to be able to measure the interior of another planet, to measure the core, the size of the core. We don't know how large the core is or whether it has some amounts of melt inside of the core. These measurements are going to be key for understanding our own terrestrial planets in our solar system, Mercury, Venus.
How can one seismometer, Troy, tell us all of this, if things go well, about the interior of a planet that's, you know, maybe only a third the size of Earth, but still pretty big?
Sure. Well, just like a sonogram allows you to see inside your body by looking at vibrations of sound waves, a seismic recorder, a seismic station, does the same. It looks at the movement of waves, seismic energy that moves through the planet. If you've ever taken any little class in seismology, in the past, you needed to have at least three stations to be able to determine the location of an earthquake. It turns out with advances in the sensitivity of the instruments and also computer models and our ability to model the way waves move through a three-dimensional structure like a sphere, we can, in fact, determine the position and depth and distance to a quake using only a single station. Now, the seismometer is more than just one instrument. There's actually six independent seismometers that are coupled together in this small package. And they can sense exactly what direction the waves are coming through in three-dimensional space. And by looking at that movement, we can determine where the quake occurred, for example. Mm-hmm. Yes, we would love to have more than one seismometer on Mars. We would love to have a whole network. And there were proposals in the past to put a network of seismometers on Mars. But as I like to say, one is infinitely larger than zero. So we will be taking a great leap forward in our understanding with this one seismometer set.
Yes, and it could pave the way for future deployments of more seismometers on Mars.
Because we're going to get such great data from just having one. I wanted to go to you, Bruce, because as we heard, this will be the eighth successful landing if it happens. Through all of these, and of course all of the orbiters, we have a flotilla of spacecraft circling Mars, including Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter with that amazing high-rise camera that we hope might just get that shot of InSight descending to the surface. What has the Planetary Society's role been in all of this as an outside but very supportive organization?
It's been multi-dimensionals. Part of what we do is advocating for space exploration, trying to support programs, including the Mars program. We've been involved with education and public outreach with a number of the missions, including the Mars 2020 rover coming up and the MASS-CAM-Z instrument that Jim Bell, the president of the Planetary Society, is the principal investigator. Hey, Jim! And then we are involved with Emily and the rest of our team with public outreach and reporting on the development of these missions and also the results from them, and basically trying to get the public excited and involved and connected to space exploration. That's kind of what we're all about.
Bruce Betts with Jennifer Jackson, Troy Hudson, and me on Caltech's Beckman Auditorium stage. When we return, it will be for the thrilling descent of InSight to Mars. This is Planetary Radio.
Hello, I'm Robert Picardo, Planetary Society board member and now the host of the Society's Planetary Post video newsletter. There's a new edition every month. We've already gone behind the scenes at JPL, partied at Yuri's Night, and visited with CEO Bill Nye. We've also got the month's top headlines from around the solar system. You can sign up at planetary.org/connect. When you do, you'll be among the first to see each new show. I hope you'll join us.
Hi, this is Emily Lakdawalla. There's no bigger gift than the cosmos. You can share your passion for space exploration by giving someone a gift membership in the Planetary Society this holiday season or any time of year. Your friend or loved one will join us as we nurture new and exciting science, advocate for space, and educate the world. You can learn more at planetary.org/givespace. That's planetary.org/givespace.
Welcome back to Planetary Radio. I'm Matt Kaplan. The latest Martian tourist arrived on Monday, November 26th. I was with 1,000 other space fans at Caltech for one of many landing parties happening all over our planet. The time had come to end my conversation with panelists Bruce Betts, Troy Hudson, and Jennifer Jackson about InSight and the science it will enable.
We have reached the point where we're going to pick up the NASA TV broadcast once again, and we're going to stick with this now for quite a while. When we come out of this, hopefully we will have heard that InSight has successfully landed, and we may even see an image from that brand new visitor to the red planet. So let's go ahead and bring that up.
Based on InSight cord, as expected, the DSN has LOS for InSight X-band.
Troy, aren't you having second thoughts about standing with your team there at JPL?
Okay, I've been on this mission for 9 years myself, and there's a lot of people both from JPL and my colleagues in Germany that I would love to be with them, but I'm here with my family, I'm here with all of you, and I'm going to be working with them on Mars for the next several months, so it's... I'm almost to Mars. I wouldn't rather be anywhere else.
Very soon.
Atmospheric entry on my mark. 3, 2, 1, mark.
Do you want to hold hands?
Absolutely.
In approximately 1 minute, InSight is expected to reach its maximum heating rate. InSight is now traveling at 1,000 meters per second.
Very close.
Once InSight slows to about 400 meters per second, it will deploy its 12-meter diameter supersonic parachute. Lander separation commanded, altitude 600 meters. Gravity turn, altitude 400 meters.
We're getting there.
300 meters, 200 meters, 80 meters, 60 meters, 50 meters, constant velocity, 37 meters, 30 meters, 20 meters, 17 meters, standing by for touchdown. Touchdown confirmed.
Wow.
Yeah!
Oh!
Congratulations.
So we knew from telemetry that InSight had made it down to the surface. Would we get to see a picture taken by one of the lander's cameras before other spacecraft flying above it moved out of communication range?
They got it.
Oh! Oh my God! Oh my God, yes! Oh!
InSight had performed flawlessly, as had the little Marco CubeSats that relayed that first image to Earth. It was minutes later that we took a call from someone else who had just witnessed the landing.
Bill Nye is waiting to talk to us. Hey, Bill, you are live in Beckman Auditorium.
Oh, greetings. Greetings, everyone. At the 321 Auditorium.
Where were you?
We shared an exciting moment. We have a giant picture from the planet Mars, up on a big screen here, I imagine you do too, little spots or dust of the planet Mars.
All right, so where were you when the big moment came, and did everybody there go as crazy as we did?
Yes, where everybody went crazy. I'm at the Jet Propulsion Lab in the big viewing area, and it was very exciting. Everybody went crazy. We watched it, you know, in real time. And I can't get over how the picture came back so quickly. It landed successfully. They literally wait for the dust to settle, like no joke. And then they send this picture. We sent this picture back. It's amazing.
Are you there with members of the InSight team?
Yes, a whole bunch. But they have, not to disappoint you, several of them have gone back to work. They have assignments. I guess they're paid. Their salaries are paid by our tax dollars. It's crazy. And there's a few moments where they didn't have to be at their stations, and so they came into the big auditorium or the medium-sized auditorium and shared the moment. Sorry, interacting with people, with cameras.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. We have one member of the team here with us on stage. Would you, you know, on our behalf, please congratulate everybody there and tell them that they gave us a great show here at Caltech.
Yes. The Planetary Society is at the Beckman Auditorium at Caltech. Thanks you all.
Thank you, Bill.
Such a great job. Thank you, InSight team. Carry on.
We're going to let Jennifer Jackson and Troy Hudson exit the stage now. Thank you so much, the two of you, being part of this.
Yes,
it was a pleasure to share it with you.
Thanks so much. Congratulations. Thank you so much.
Bruce, come on over. Thank you, Jennifer. Okay, we are going to go into that segment that has closed Planetary Radio right from its start 16 years ago yesterday, and that is the What's Up segment. And so here with me is the Chief Scientist for the Planetary Society, Bruce Betts. Welcome.
Thank you.
For the second time.
Good to be here, Matt.
Okay, well, let's start as we always do. What's up in the night sky?
All right, well, I'd encourage everyone after this amazing Mars landing to go out tonight or tomorrow night whenever you have a chance in a clear sky and see Mars. Mars is visible in the early evening in the south, looking like a bright reddish star. It's still fading as we get farther away from it, but it still looks like a bright reddish star. Saturn is to its lower right, getting pretty low, but you can still see it low in the west soon after sunset, looking like a yellowish star. And then in the pre-dawn, we've got Venus looking just dominating, super bright in the east, and it is near the moon on December 3rd. And then the one that's a little tough to see, Mercury, coming up in the next couple weeks. And December 5th, Mercury looking like a bright star, but not nearly as bright as Venus, to the lower left of Venus. Mercury will be near the moon on December 5th.
I just loved looking up at that little orange wandering star, the red planet.
Now you can think about, whoa, there's a new lander there.
Yeah.
All right, we move on to this week in space history. It happens there are two significant dates in Mars exploration history. Mariner 4, the first successful flyby of Mars, it launched in this week in 1964. And Mars Pathfinder, successful lander, launched in 1996 in this week.
Mariner 4 gave us those first lunar-looking images, right, that depressed a lot of people.
Yeah, and Mariner 4 and then 6 and 7, all flybys, happened to see the heavily cratered parts of Mars and missed the big giant volcanoes, canyons, and evidence of water, which we then got from Mariner 9 in the early 70s.
Okay, we're going to get some help for this next bit.
All right, so on three, I want you all to say random space fact. One, two, three. Random space pack.
Well done.
Well done. So InSight has landed approximately 550 kilometers from the Curiosity rover, or about the distance from Pasadena to Sacramento, or LA to San Francisco.
All right. We're ready to go on to the more interactive portion of What's Up, I think. Let's go ahead and finish the contest, the question that you gave people a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, all right, so I asked you, what were the most advanced creatures to fly around the moon on Zond 5, the first mission to fly around the moon and return to Earth successfully?
And a bit more about Zond 5? Wasn't one of ours.
No, it's the Soviet Zond 5, and it did a trajectory where it went, flew around the moon, came back, and then returned a return capsule into Earth's atmosphere successfully, was the first to do so, and it flew various forms of life on the mission. So the question was not the bacteria or the other little guys, but what were the bigger guys that flew on Zond 5? How'd we do?
We got, I think, the biggest response we've ever gotten for the contest. We have a winner, I think, chosen by random.org, as all of our winners who have the right response have. Nicole Martinez in Wausau, Wisconsin. I think I pronounced that correctly, thanks to a company that used to advertise them there. She says that in the little menagerie on Zond 5, yeah, there were two tortoises.
Indeed, two Russian tortoises that came back healthy. They'd lost 10% of their body weight, but they gained it back.
What have you got for the folks at home?
For the folks at home, what do the InSight lander and some warriors from the Middle Ages have in common? Go to planetary.org/radio contest.
Wow.
I have one thing in mind. Our creative listeners may come up with others that we'll accept, but one thing in mind, InSight and some warriors from the Middle Ages. What do they have in common? Go to planetary.org/radio contest.
You have until Wednesday, December 5th at 8 a.m. Pacific time to get us the answer to this latest question and maybe win yourself a Planetary Radio t-shirt. And you can check those out in the Planetary Society store at chopshopstore.com or actually end a 200-point itelescope.net account. iTelescope is that nonprofit worldwide network of telescopes that you can use to take a look at the red planet up close. And we've got a great relationship with them. You can also donate that 200-point account for use by underprivileged kids somewhere around the world. Okay, we are done.
All right, everybody, go out there, look up in the night sky, and think about relaxing in a lawn chair on the plains of Elysium Planitia next to the InSight lander. Thank you, and good night.
Sounds good to me. Thank you, Bruce. And just to wrap up, I'll see you around the office, of course, and on the next episode of Planetary Radio. It's time for us to end our celebration of InSight, and we have lots of people to thank, beginning with our wonderful panelists. As you heard, Jennifer Jackson and Troy Hudson, could we get another hand for them? I also want to thank the great tech staff here at Beckman Auditorium. I want to thank Emily and Bill, Emily Lakdawalla and Bill Nye, the CEO of the Planetary Society, for joining us. And finally, speaking for Bill Nye and all of us at the Planetary Society, we are especially grateful to our partner here today, Caltech. Can we hear it for the California Institute of Technology?
Go Beavers!
And special thanks to Caltech's Director of Strategy and Special Projects, Shana Chabner. I'm Matt Kaplan, hoping you will join us next week for another weekly episode of Planetary Radio. Please visit us at planetary.org and look for us across social media as the Planetary Society. Thank you for joining us on this great day for exploration. Ad Astra and Ad Aries.